You know, I knew immediately that he was dead. Now, I hadn't been told that. I'd only been told that he'd been shot again. But I knew he was dead. So I just prayed. I prayed for about 40 minutes before my mom called to say that he had died. And then I just stood there and I just started thinking about the men who had done this, the men who had killed him.
I'm Adira Polite, and this is Then God Moved. All right, so I am here with Brock Easley. He is the filmmaker behind the short film, The Shift, which is well on its way to becoming a feature film. I guess the feature film will be released, 2023?
If we are fortunate, yes. We're working on getting the funds together right now, doing a crowdfunding campaign for that, and it all goes well, then yes, 2022 would be an amazing year for The Shift.
Okay. Wow. Well, I have heard so much about you from our mutual friend, and I've heard a lot about the storms that your family has gone through leading up to this point. I saw the short film actually earlier today. I heard that it was made with $500. Is that true?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was made for $500 because it was made at a time when, I mean, basically the worst financial position of my life. And I went to my friends and I just said, will you help me do this? I've never written a screenplay before and never directed a short film before, but I think I can do it. And if you'll help me out, I think we can make something pretty special. And thankfully, it all worked out. It all worked out. And they were amazing.
I mean, it doesn't look like it was made with $500. I'm still like a little confused about that. Like, were these all volunteers? Like, how did you get decent lighting and everything? Because it looks like a legit film.
No, it does. You say $500, and if you're listening to this and you've never seen anything, never seen a photo or anything, then you're thinking, oh gosh, I don't want to watch a $500 film. That's going to look like, you know, something my cousin's nephew could, that would be, you know, could make. And it does not look like a $500 film, not even close. It doesn't sound like one. It doesn't look like one. It's not acted like one. You know, I came to do this film after a full year, more than a year of unemployment. During that time, you know, my wife and I made it a matter of sincere prayer to figure out what to do with our lives as the next step. You know, I'd had prior to that, a 15-year career as a graphic designer and as an art director. And, when I lost that job, I just didn't know what to do. And all the interviews that I was going out on, I was getting really close and then not getting the job over and over and over again. And so it was just a very confusing and a very lost time for me. You know, I made it a matter of prayer. My wife made it a matter of prayer. And I got the most unexpected answer from that prayer, which was, you know, you need to pivot towards filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I had never had any aspirations to be a filmmaker. I had always loved movies and I would read, you know, all of the magazines and I'd watch all the behind the scenes features on DVDs and listen to the director's commentaries and do all of that stuff. And just because I was fascinated by it. So I had this huge wealth of knowledge, but never with the intent to do anything with it. Mm. But the opportunity did present itself. A local film company invited me to join them because they knew I was a writer and they thought I could help them tell more stories. And I thought, well, I'll pray about that. And so I did. And that was the response I got. And knowing that if I did that, I would continue to not make money. Because you're talking about a small independent production company that had a big movie coming out, but there wasn't any money to pay me a salary or health insurance or all of that stuff. And I have three kids. And in a lot of ways, it was the most irresponsible decision I could have possibly made. But it was a decision made on the back of prayer, guided and directed by God. And when you do that, no matter what the reasoning or logic might be, if you follow where the Lord is leading you, it is going to work out. That doesn't mean it's going to work out immediately. And so about a year after that prayer is when I realized, oh my gosh, I know a really great cinematographer. I know some pretty decent actors. I know a guy who does amazing sound design. And I realized that after a year of being in that world, I knew everybody I needed to know in order to make a really good film. All we needed was a good story and a good director. And unfortunately, for either one of those, all we had was me. So I wrote it and then I directed it and they all volunteered their time. The $500 was spent on food. That's what it was spent on. It was spent on the food that we fed them to keep them on set.
Wow.
And so everybody you see on film, everybody behind the camera, they all just donated their time and their talent. Mm-hmm. Even the score is original. I found some composers locally, some friends of mine who were into music and never really composed for a film before, but wanted to give it a shot. And the film was made. And it became something that I think was a lot greater than any of us thought it could be. And now here we are today, crowdfunding to make it into a full-length feature film and making it into something that can really touch people's lives. What I have seen with the short film, I've seen real genuine changes in people after watching that film. I got a message just the other day from a gentleman who said that, you know, he was in his car and he saw this film. I don't know if he was watching it while he was driving. I hope he wasn't, but he was driving and inspired by the film, inspired by what he saw and however it spoke to him. Turned his car around, went back to his family, and told them that he loved them.
Mm.
And then he finished that comment with, "God is real." So I don't know what that man was going through. I don't know anything beyond what I just told you. But I've had so many messages like that from people who watch this. And in this little film that I made for $500, really just trying to tell a story that meant something to me, honestly thinking no one is ever going to see this because what a weird movie. What a weird movie, you know, and I've talked about the movie without actually saying what the movie is, but the movie is a science fiction film combined with a faith element. And that's weird. And that's not something people do a lot of, but it was something that I wanted to do because those are two things I'm really passionate about. I love science fiction and I love my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see any reason why to not mix them up because through the metaphors and the devices that are available to us through science fiction, I felt like there were things that I could express about my faith. In a really interesting way, and in a way that I couldn't express in another way. And so it is strange, but it is about a man coming face to face with the devil, being challenged by him, being tempted by him, and ultimately seeking salvation in his Savior. That's what the film is.
Yeah.
And so any other descriptors you use really are secondary to that battle between evil and good, and with man caught in the middle. You know, the whole thing is just intended as a bit of an allegory, I suppose, for our experience here on Earth. Because I think that's what's going on. I think that there is a battle for our souls waging constantly every day. And it's very real. And by shining a light on that, which is really what I'm trying to do with this film, I want to expose what the tactics are and help people to understand that there is an answer and there is a way. And my experience has been that we hit the mark. People are watching this thing and that is what they are getting. And they are feeling encouraged in their trials. And it's because it's very honest, because this came about at a time of trial for me, one of the lowest points of my life. But I think people want to see stories like that. I think they want to see stories of people who are having a very real experience. And that's what I tried to provide with this film. That was a very long answer to your very simple question.
I love it. I love it. You covered all the bases. So, well, you already said that the main message is really trying to point people to the very real battle that's happening here on Earth. And but I'm wondering what the core message is, if you had to sum it up, because what I've heard about, and if you're not comfortable talking about this, totally okay. Mm-hmm. I've heard about your journey toward forgiveness of the man who took your father's life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I have a very personal interest in because my background is in restorative justice. And I spent some time working as a paralegal for people on death row. And I've always been very frustrated by the misconceptions about the gospel, which that's what it is at the end of the day. People, even in the church, you know, they believe that some people are too far gone, that the sin that some people have committed is just too atrocious and just toss them aside. Mm-hmm. And so the message that I am most passionate about when I think about my art and the stories that I want to tell is that anybody can be redeemed. And so I'm wondering if that journey toward forgiveness is underlying anything in this script. And if not, like, what is the core message and how does your past relate to that?
So that is a great question. And I think that the experience that I had, you know, with my father and with him being killed is directly related to what I'm doing with the shift. You know, that period of time, my father was the victim of two armed robberies in his lifetime. The first one occurred when I was about 12 years old, and he was shot. He owned a store that sold you know, guns and bait and fish and tackle and all kinds of stuff. And he was packing up for the night, and two men burst in, and they just immediately started shooting. My dad always had a gun on him, and he tried to get it out, but they were way too fast. First bullet right into his stomach, took him down very quickly. They then proceeded to shoot out all of the display cases, shattering the glass so that they could get at the guns and scoop them up, put them into their bags. While one of them did that, the other one, while my father was on the ground, continued to shoot him, just up and down his body. He was shot 13 times that night, which is a lot,
Yeah.
I don't actually know anybody who's been shot that many times and actually lived through it. Mm-hmm. But he did. He called 911 for himself, and they came and they were able to rescue him. It was definitely a very touch and go there, as you can imagine. He was in critical condition for a couple of weeks, but about 4 weeks after he was shot, he went home and he continued to live his life. And, as a young, very young man at that time, you know, it's a formative experience when something like that happens. And I got the opportunity to observe my father after that shooting. And I got to observe what his disposition was towards two things: his disposition towards God and his disposition towards the men who did it. Mm-hmm. And with God, he never had a moment where he said, you know, why me? Or why did you make this happen? My dad's disposition towards God was, thank you for allowing me to get through it. Thank you for helping me through it. So there was no anger towards God. And then with the men who did it to him, the thing that he would say, the thing that he kept coming back to was, and he would kind of shake his fist, he'd say, you know, just give me 5 minutes alone with those guys in a room. And it was like a joke. It was a joke. He wasn't serious. Mm-hmm. And that was all he ever said about them. That was it. So there was no, like, you know, pent up anger that he harbored towards God or towards those men. He went on with his life, grateful to have it. Mm-hmm. 8 years later, I'm now 19 years old. I'm serving as a missionary. It's been 10 months since I've seen my dad. The last thing I ever said to him in person was, I'll see you later. And I get the call, and he's been shot again. And gosh, it's been so long. You'd think it wouldn't affect me this way, but it still does. Yeah, it's my dad. You know, I knew immediately that he was dead. Now, I hadn't been told that. I'd only been told that he'd been shot again, but I knew he was dead. And so I started praying, though. I shoved that thought aside, and I just started praying as hard as I could that my dad would be safe. But they were very, very faithless prayer. I didn't feel like there was any point to them, but I didn't know what else to do. So I just prayed. I prayed for about 40 minutes before my mom called to say that he had died. And it was the same thing. Two men burst in, one of the guns shot him. This time they got him. First shot entered his heart. And so he was dead pretty quickly. And I remember after finding out, going to the bedroom. I was still dressed in the shirt and tie that I had been wearing earlier that day. I took the tie off my neck and I put it on the rack, and I looked down at my feet and I squared my feet up to the closet, and I just made them perfectly straight. It was like this weird thing of, I've got to control something. I've got to make something right. So I made my feet straight. And then I just stood there and I just started thinking about the men who had done this, the men who had killed him, that it wasn't God. It wasn't a random thing. As two men came in and they wanted to kill him, and they did. And I started thinking about that, and I got angry. I got really mad. And I just, under my breath, because I was a missionary, I didn't curse. I just said those jerks. And I just took my fist and I just slammed it against the frame of the closet as hard as I could. And it was just this moment of anger. And that's all it was. It was just a moment. And it went away. Because then I started thinking more about the men who had done it. I started thinking about them as children of God, as boys, as babies, as people who had grown up. And they didn't grow up with the thought of killing somebody. They didn't grow up wanting to harm people. They grew up probably with a lot of the same hopes and ambitions that I had. and wanting to do good, wanting to do right by their families. They were children of God. And whether they knew it or not, they had lost something very precious. And whether they knew it or not, one day they would realize what they had done. I'm sure in that moment they had no regrets. I don't know. I've never met them. I've never talked to them. But whether or not they understood the magnitude of what they had done, taking this man, this father, this husband, this friend, this brother, this son, away from the world, one day they would recognize what they had done. I don't know about you, but I've sinned in my life, and I know what that feels like. Not to that degree. I've never killed anybody. But I have sinned, and I have felt the pain and the anguish of that. And then the relief by calling on my Savior, I felt that too. But what they had done was awful. And whether or not they could achieve forgiveness, that would be up to them. But there is still the pain of having to go through the realization of the magnitude of what you have done. That has to occur in order for forgiveness to be achieved. And should they not be forgiven, should they not reach out in that way, then that's even worse. So either way we're looking at it, we're looking at two people who are going to experience a tremendous amount of pain at some point or another, whether they're in this life or the next. And when I started thinking about that, I realized that what had happened to my father that night was not the worst thing that had happened. The worst thing that had happened that night was what these two men had done to themselves, what they had done to their souls. And when you realize that, forgiveness is automatic. Empathy is automatic. There was no hesitation. And I have never felt a moment of anger or resentment towards them since. And that experience was light. That was pure light coming into my life in one of my darkest moments. That's what that was. So how does any of this relate to a movie about a man facing off with the devil? What the movie is trying to do is show that even in the darkest of moments, light can cut through it and shine. And I believe, based on my experiences, based on experiences of literally everybody I've ever talked to, that when we see God's light the brightest, it's actually when we're in the darkest of moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if we're not showing those dark moments in the stories that we tell, in the movies that we make, whatever, we cannot shine God's light as bright as it is meant to shine. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the film is. The film is about showing the darkness that we're all dealing with every single day, exposing it, putting it in the light, letting us see that God's light completely eradicates the darkness. That's what I learned that day. That's what I've learned since. And I think that when you get to the end of the short film, I think you see that light come in. That doesn't mean everything's wrapped up in a bow. That doesn't mean everything's better. Because when we're here on this earth, it's not that way. Since my dad died, since my dad was killed, I've had to deal with many, many trials since then. My wife and I have a daughter with special needs. That was a heck of a trial that we didn't see coming. We both lost our jobs and within 24 hours of each other. That was a trial that we didn't see coming. You know, so we've had, it's not like life is fantastic now. But I can deal with it. I know how to handle it. And I know where to find the light when I'm feeling dark. That's what I want this film to be. That's the place that it's coming from for me, is that I'm not afraid of showing the difficulties of life because I know that that is how we get closer to God.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that because something that I think about a lot in relation to testimonies is how do I tell the true story without it being, I was going through the worst time in my life, I met the Lord, and then everything was happily ever after. Because sometimes, because there's such bite-sized stories, it sounds like that. But I really do think what is making your film stand apart, and things like The Chosen, and even The Encounter on PureFlix, is that they're not corny, quote-unquote, Christian movies. And that's because of the depths. You're showing the valleys of the faith. But I guess I'm wondering, how are you learning to balance that with the joy? How do you like depict joy, true, authentic Christian joy on film that's not just happiness? It's something bigger.
Right. I think you do that by having very real characters. You can't fake joy.
Yeah.
You can fake happiness. You know, I smile and I look happy. But how do I exhibit joy? How can I get you to be convinced that I'm experiencing joy? Well, there's kind of a depth to joy, I think. I think joy is a little bit more enduring maybe than happiness or just being happy in a moment. And so I think the only way that you get there is by having characters who are very real. I think you need to understand what they're struggling with. And I think you need to see them respond badly to something. You know, when you think about the relationships that you have in your life that mean the most to you, I think you're talking about people who fill a particular role. You have a need within yourself and they fulfill that need. Well, if we can't establish with very real people, very real characters in our stories that they have a need, that there's something that they lack, then we can't fill them with anything. There's no hole there, then there's nothing that we can do to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to have characters who have holes, mm-hmm. who need people, who need God. And then when you come in and you fill that and the audience gets to experience that with them and see them come out of the hole that they're in, if I can totally mix my metaphors here for a second, that is when we see the joy. That is when we feel it. That's when it becomes so authentic. I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah. Totally.
No, it does. But I'm also wondering, how do you then, and this is kind of, I'm asking for myself, but how do you make the audience notice that they have holes themselves without being preachy?
That's a good question. Because look, being preachy is the worst thing you can do, I think, as a storyteller. Yeah. I think people immediately turn it off. There's other ways to preach. A good storyteller will construct their story in such a way that the preaching happens in the mind of the person who is watching it, not because a character speaks it. I think that you have got to create people who are going through something that's relatable in order for people to see themselves. So when we understand, you know, why people are the way they are, we understand why characters are the way they are, and they're properly motivated, and those things are set up properly, then when they're responding to situations, we can identify with what they're going through.
Yeah.
You know, if a man pops off at his wife and yells at her, I better understand why he's doing that. This is supposed mm-hmm. to be somebody that he loved. And if you don't know, then people tune out. They tune
out. Right.
So I think strong characters that we understand their motivations, I think that's the key. That's the key for people to be able to relate. Everybody's human. You know, I may not have ever beaten my wife. Let me say it this way. I have never beaten my wife.
Okay. Let's be very clear.
I have never beaten my wife. There's no may about that.
Yes.
But I have been angry at my wife.
Yeah.
You know? And so I understand anger. So can I identify with somebody, just to be completely like outlandish, can I identify with somebody who beats their wife? Can I identify with a character who has, you know, actually takes their fist and abuses their spouse in that way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can. Not because I've done it, but because I have felt anger before. I have felt anger towards someone. And so if I understand where their anger is coming from, and if their anger is coming from a place that's similar to mine, well, then all of a sudden, this story of this wife abuser, now it's a warning, isn't it? Now it's a, I better be careful. I don't want to go down that path.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to see them. I want to see them come out of it. I want to see them get better. I want to see them repent.
Spoken like a true first-time filmmaker, not at all. I'm getting like veteran filmmaker vibes, but I guess I'll believe your story.
You know, look, I've had some stuff happen to me, you know, and I think there's some good stories that I've been blessed with. Let's put it that way. That's the way I look at my trial.
Yeah.
I've been blessed with some great stories. And when you start interrogating your life in that way, I think you learn some things about how to tell a story, how to tell something that's fictional.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I see it.
Hmm. Okay, I have a weird question for you. So I've talked to a few Christian artists, or as they might call themselves, artists who are Christians, who have very strong opinions about the idea of Christian art. So I'm wondering if you consider yourself a Christian artist and that your art is a vehicle for the gospel, or would you say you're an artist who, in a sense, happens to be a Christian?
Probably the latter.
Yeah.
I would say the latter, mostly because I think taking the former approach is what leads to preachy and corny, you know, stories. There are things that I'm developing a TV show, for example, that doesn't have a faith element, and that is currently being looked at by a studio in Hollywood. but it's not a faith-based thing. I think anything I do is going to be imbued with my values. And as much as I can, I want to work in the faith space because that's what means the most to me. Mm. But I don't approach things faith first. I approach things story first. Mm. And then because I am who I am, my values, and if the opportunity is there, my faith will come through. And look, this isn't just faith. Any agenda-based approach to telling a story is going to end up being false. Mm. It just is. You cannot start with the agenda. You have to start with the characters in the story, and then we all have different things and messages we want to get across. Those will either manifest themselves or you will find a way to fold them in if it's that important to you. But but doing agenda-based art, I think that's called propaganda. People see through that stuff. Mm. I don't want to make that. I want to make something that people enjoy and approach because they think they're going to be entertained, and that there's something of value to them. And then I want to hit them with the faith or the message or whatever it is, and let that just flow naturally.
Okay, so the shift, not propaganda. How can we support?
So if you go to angelstudios.com/the shift, you can watch the short film there. You can see a number of videos down at the bottom of the page. You can see our team. You can ask questions there. And of course, you can invest there.
Yes.
And a big thing that we just added in the last week, and this is something that I do not believe any filmmaker has ever done before, but we have taken the full script for the feature film that we are trying to make, and we've just put it online for anybody to read. Mm. And not only to read, but you can actually just listen to it if you would prefer that experience. So, you know, if you watch the short film and you're like, crud, I want to know what happens next, there's nothing stopping you. But for the next 3 weeks, that script will be available. And I say 3 weeks because on April 29th, this campaign ends, and that'll be our last day to receive investment.
Okay.
But that's angelstudios.com/the shift.
Okay, and what is the minimum?
Sure. So the minimum investment, and I can't go too deep on talking about the investment just because of SEC regulations. This is a totally legit enterprise. We are fully regulated. You are actually buying shares. But the minimum investment is $102.
Okay.
And there are a lot of different reasons for that. It's not just because we're trying to cut out people who, you know, only want to put in five or whatever. It's not that. There's a lot of logistics that go into why that is the minimum. So, but yeah, but that is our minimum.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. I just think that this is huge. I can sense it. Like, God is doing something with this and The Chosen. I'm like, the tide is turning in Christian entertainment. Something different is really, truly happening. And I feel like it's going to be really cool to look back and have been some small part of that.
No, I appreciate that. And thank you for wanting to partner with us. The Chosen is leading the way. It really is.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, The Shift short film was shot before Dallas shot The Shepherd, the pilot for The Chosen.
Really?
Yeah, that's how old it is. It's how long it's taken me to get it out into the world because who am I? I'm nobody. But The Chosen really is leading the way.
Yeah.
And I would love to be part of that conversation. I would love for people to look back and say, man, The Chosen and then this crazy film over here, The Shift, they really did represent kind of a sea change, the beginning of something.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for being here.
I will
put
you.
All the information in the show notes so that people can go check it out and hopefully partner with you.
Yeah, we would love to have them. Thank you so much, Adira.
As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. And please feel free to send any questions or comments to thengodmoved@gmail.com.